We're back, and I'm Maya.
And I'm still Saya, unfortunately.
And I still sound sick because we're recording these back to back to back to front to back to back to back.
Ooh.
And we're here. Well, it's finally the new year. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nope, this isn't the first episode of the new year, but it's the new year. Technically, at the time of when this is actually coming out versus today.
Yeah.
So we're on chapter 7, Nightmare.
This book.
Well, I don't think she chose it because it's a clever play on just the whole... Okay, you know that one painting where it's like the woman who's asleep with the little weird devil thing on her chest?
Mm-hmm.
And then the horse with its head out the curtains?
Yeah, you made a meme out of it.
I did. But technically that is called the Nightmare. And that's where we get the whole, like, because there's a mare in there, and it's night, it's a nightmare.
Yeah. Oh, funny.
And the thing on her chest is an incubus, a type of vampire, yes, so to speak. But no, no one thinks about being clever.
No.
I told Charlie I had a lot of homework to do, and that I didn't want anything to eat. There was a basketball game on that he was excited about. Wait, so it's at least March.
Yeah, it is.
If there's basketball going on, it's March.
Mm-hmm.
God, I don't know how it's... I don't know what March is like in the... What, the Pacific Northwest? Okay, I had... That he was excited about... Though, of course, I had no idea what was special about it, so he wasn't aware of anything unusual in my face or tone. Once in my room, I locked the door. I dug through my desk until I found my old headphones. I plugged them into my little CD player. Oh my god, remember CD players? Mm-hmm. Oh my god.
Mm. We said the same thing in the last episode.
I know, because of stereos! But this is a CD player! I picked up a CD that Phil had given to me for Christmas. It was one of his favorite bands, but they used a little too much bass and shrieking for my tastes.
Then why are you listening to it, Bella?
Because it was a gift. Also, why would he give her a gift of one of his favorite bands?
Yeah.
Not one of Bella's. I popped it into place and laid down on my bed. I put on the headphones, hit play, and turned up the volume until it hurt my ears. That's how you become deaf, Bella.
But that's also how I listen to things.
True. I closed my eyes, but the light still intruded, so I added a pillow over the top half of my face. I concentrated very carefully on the music, trying to understand the lyrics to unravel the complicated drum patterns. By the third time I'd listened through the CD... Wait, she listened through the whole CD?
Three times.
That must have been, like, at least an hour and a half.
What is the point of this?
I don't know. Word count. I knew all the words to the choruses, at least. Wait. She listened to the whole album 3 times and she remembers everything?
Mm-hmm.
I would not be able to do that.
Oh, me neither.
Listening through the whole album. If I listen to the same song, like...
It takes a while.
If I listen to the same song for an hour and a half, yeah, then I would remember it. But the whole CD?
No.
At least I was surprised to find that I really did like the band after all, once I got past the blaring noise. I'd have to thank Phil again. And it worked. The shattering beats made it impossible for me to think, which was the whole purpose of the exercise. I listened to the CD again and again until I was singing along with all the songs, until finally I fell asleep. That's not how you... White noise helps, but... No. Just singing as she falls asleep. Mm-hmm. Edward's in her closet watching the whole thing.
Going, what the fuck
is up with her? I opened my eyes to a familiar place, aware in some corner of my consciousness that I was dreaming. I recognized the green light of the forest. I could hear the waves crashing against the rocks somewhere nearby. And I knew that if I found the ocean, I'd be able to see the sun. I was trying to follow the sound, but then Jacob Black was there, tugging on my hand, pulling me back toward the blackest part of the forest. "Jacob, what's wrong?" I asked. His face was frightened as he yanked with all his strength against my resistance. I didn't want to go into the dark. "Run, Bella, you have to run," he whispered, terrified. "This way, Bella," I recognized Mike's voice calling out of the gloomy heart of the trees. But I couldn't see him. Okay, but instinctually, it's like, do I go towards the light, or do I go towards the voices of, like, the disembodied voices of people I can't see? Because
it's never the disembodied voices.
It's never the person you think it is, because things live out there that can mimic voices. It's not fun. This sounds like dead or dead either way.
Mm-hmm.
Why? I asked, still pulling against Jacob's grasp, desperate now to find the sun. But Jacob let go of my hand and yelped, suddenly shaking, falling to the dim forest floor. He twitched on the ground as I watched in horror. "Jacob!" I screamed, but he was gone. In his place was a large red-brown wolf with black eyes. Oh my god.
Well, fucking spoilers.
That's, I forgot all about this.
Mm-hmm.
I really did. Second book makes a lot more sense now. The wolf faced away from me, pointing toward the shore, the hair on the back of his shoulders bristling, low growls issuing from between his exposed fangs. "Bella, run!" Mike cried out again from behind me, but it didn't turn. I was watching a light coming toward me from the beach. It's Edward sparkling. And then just his arms outstretched and he's just closed, eyes closed as he's walking mm-hmm. angelically with his shirt off. I was watching, and then Edward stepped out from the trees, his skin faintly glowing, his eyes black and dangerous. He held up one hand and beckoned me to come to him. The wolf growled at my feet. I took a step forward toward Edward. He smiled, and then his teeth were sharp, pointed. "Trust me," he purred. I took another step. The wolf launched himself across the space between me and the vampire, fangs aiming for the jugular. "No," I screamed, wrenching upright out of my bed. Okay, wouldn't a dream like that, like, kind of, like, make me think, like, okay, maybe I should stay away from Edward Cullen?
Yeah.
That's more warning of, like, I don't think I should be around this guy.
It's like, yeah, it's everybody in this dream is like, run away, Bella, and she's like, no.
No, I do what I want. My sudden movement caused the headphones to pull the CD player off the bedside table, and it clattered to the wooden floor. My light was still on. I was sitting fully dressed on the bed with my shoes on. I glanced. You don't take them off by the door? Were you born in a barn?
Right.
I glanced disoriented at the clock on my dresser. It was 5:30 in the morning. I groaned, fell back, and rolled over onto my face, kicking off my boots. I was too uncomfortable to get anywhere near sleep, though. I rolled back over and unbuttoned my jeans, yanking them off awkwardly as I tried to stay horizontal. I could feel the braid in my hair, an uncomfortable ridge along the back of my skull. I turned onto my side and ripped the rubber band out. Ugh!
Ouch!
Quickly combing through the plates with my fingers, I pulled the pillow back over my eyes. It was all no use, of course. My subconscious had dredged up exactly the images I had been trying so desperately to avoid. I was going to have to face them now. I sat up and my head spun for a minute as the blood flowed downward. First things first, I thought to myself, happy to put it off as long as possible, I grabbed my bathroom bag. The shower didn't last nearly as long as I hoped it would, though. Even taking the time to blow dry my hair, I was soon... Wait, blow drying your hair at, like, what, 5:30 in the morning?
Yeah, right?
Isn't that gonna wake up Charlie?
You'd think.
Yeah. I was soon out of things to do in the bathroom. Wrapped in a towel, I crossed back to my room. I couldn't tell if Charlie was still asleep or if he had already left. I went to look out my window and the cruiser was gone. Okay, he's out fishing again, I guess. So I guess she isn't waking him up. But still, 5:30 in the morning? I dressed slowly in my most comfy sweats and then made my bed, something I never did. Wait, she's just still staying awake at this early in the morning?
Yeah.
Gross.
Right.
I mean, it happens to me sometimes, but it's gross.
But gross.
It's gross. I couldn't put it off any longer. I went to my desk and switched on my old computer. I hated using the internet here. My modem was sadly outdated. My free service substandard. Just dialing up took so long that I decided to go get myself a bowl of cereal while I waited. Oh, dial up.
Oh, dial up.
God. I ate slowly, chewing each bite with care. When I was done, I washed the bowl and... Yeah, seriously, this is like word count.
This is so boring.
And then dried them, and then put them away, and then I started the dishwasher. Then I decided to go do some laundry. I put each individual piece of clothing painstakingly in the washer, including my underwear, which had holes in it. I went to my CD player first, picking off the floor and placing it precisely in the center of the table. It had to be exactly in the center of the table. I pulled out the headphones and put them away in the desk drawer. Then I turned the same CD on, turning it down to the point where it was background noise. She's just listening to that CD over and over again. With another sigh, I turned to my computer. Naturally, the screen was covered in pop-up ads. That only happens if your computer has a virus, Bella.
Or if you're not using an ad blocker.
That too. Just... Yeah, no. That's... No. I sat up in my hard folding chair and began... Oh, she's sitting in a folding chair at her desk?
Yeah.
Gross. And began closing all the little windows. Eventually, I made it to my favorite search engine. I shut down a few more pop-up ads and then typed in one word. Vampire. Oh, yeah. You don't know what's gonna... Oh, this is like...
Honestly, I feel like her favorite search engine is, like, Ask Jeeves.
I was about to say Ask Jeeves.
You are absolutely welcome for that.
I mean, as old as that is, but I also feel like Bing.
That was gonna be my first one!
Bella feels like a Bing person.
She does.
Bing is the worst.
Fuck you, Bing.
And I'm not saying this because, oh, I prefer Google. No, it's like I Google search something in, like, I search something in Bing and it's like...
It's just not even related.
It's not what I want. It took an infuriatingly long time, of course. When the results came up, there was a lot to sift through. Everything from movies and TV shows to role-playing games, underground metal, and gothic cosmetic companies. You mean, like, Vampire the Masquerade? And then there's, like... Can you could have just typed in Vampire Legends.
Or yeah.
What is a vampire?
What is a vampire?
Then I found a promising site, Vampires A through Z. Not even a .com.
No, not even a .com.
I waited impatiently for it to load, quickly clicking closed each ad that flashed across the screen. She's just being onslaughted by ads.
I know.
That's kind of funny. Finally, the screen was finished, simply white background with black text, academic looking. Two quotes greeted me on the homepage. I call bullshit on that because anything that's going to be, like, vampire-related, it's going to be, like, black screen and, like, blood-red letters.
Oh, right.
And it's going to have, like, a weird, like, blood-drippy font or something.
Especially
weird like that.
Especially in the 2000s. Like, yeah. Come on.
And it's going to have, like, music blaring out of it.
It's just a MySpace page. It's just an edgy kids MySpace page.
Oh, my God, yeah. Their username is Vampires A through Z. God. Two quotes greeted me on the homepage. Throughout the vast shadowy world of ghosts and demons, there is no figure so terrible, no figure so dreaded and abhorred, yet dight with such fearful fascination as the vampire, who is himself neither ghost nor demon, but yet who partakes the dark natures and possesses the mysterious and terrible qualities of both. Reverend Montague Summers. I feel like this is an actual quote. Also, I'm pretty sure demons are worse than vampires because, you know, the whole possession thing.
Yeah, and, you know, the whole being from hell thing.
The whole being from hell, and then the whole, like, you know, being able to, like, make someone walk up the fucking wall.
Mm-hmm.
If there is in this world a well-attested account, it is that of the vampires. Nothing is lacking. Official reports, affidavits of well-known people, of surgeons, of priests, of magistrates, the judicial proof is most complete. With all that, who is there who believes in vampires? Rousseau? Okay, so I say this in my everyday life. To be a believer, you also have to be a skeptic.
Exactly.
And the thing is, the vampire hysteria thing, when it started in Europe, it started as a thing because people didn't understand the anatomy of dead bodies and how they acted when they were decomposing.
Yes.
So, if you don't know, like, the body will be as is, then it'll bloat up before it shrivels because of the gases escaping from the body itself. This is a modern day thing, like, that people still find in old graveyards, where it's like how they would bury people that were suspected vampires. They'd cut off the head, put it, like, between the legs.
Yep.
Or they'd do certain things. But the way that they identified vampires was through, if someone was recently deceased, they'd bury them. And then if they're a vampire, they'd dig them back up. And they would check for signs. And one of them would be, like, if they looked, like, if the decomposition wasn't too far along, if there was, like, in most cases, they would, like, find blood dripping from, like, the mouth or an orifice.
Mm-hmm.
And usually, or if they would see something weird with the mouth, and usually that's because the mouth shrivels up and it exposes the teeth more. But again, that's just the body decomposing.
And that, well, I've heard of the ones where it's, like, the nails appear to have grown.
It's because everything is shrinking down.
Yeah.
It just, like, including, like, the hair and all that, everything is shrinking down, so it makes it look longer.
Yeah.
And that's how that started. And then if we keep, like, you know, the story of the Countess Bathory and all that.
Yeah.
A lot of that has been speculated now to be highly exaggerated to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of the whole just everyone demonizing women in history. In general.
Well, there's also this could, you know, spurn off of it, but, you know, the whole entire, which thing was going around, I don't remember, but it was when people would fall into a coma and be presumed dead.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
But they would still be alive and they would wake up.
In the grave.
Yeah.
There was actually a thing that they used to do where they would put a bell.
Yep, on the finger.
Yeah, so that way it's like you can ring the bell if you're alive or dead.
That's so morbid.
I know. And then, you know, in some old graves they have like the bars over them.
Mm-hmm.
It's mostly to deter grave robbers versus stopping something from rising from the dead.
Yeah.
But generally those are, like, the scientific, here's the scientific explanation on why this is happening.
Yeah.
But there's still legends of stuff, and there's still legends of, like, these sightings and these occurrences happening, so there's another part of me where it's like, this could be true. Especially because it spans over different regions of,
yeah,
human-like entities draining the blood of people.
And then, you know, you could also contend with the myth of the chupacabra.
The chupacabra, though, is more of a...
It's a animal. More of an animal, yeah.
It looks different. Like, if you compare it to, like, the American version to the Hispanic Mexican version, it's like Mexico, it looks more like a dog, while here it looks like some weird biped creature.
I don't know.
Like, I don't get why it's like that.
Because I listen to this channel that reads letters from a cryptid hunter, if it's real or not, whatever, but the way that the person described it in the letter, I just couldn't, like, figure it out. But I feel like that's maybe one of those things where I have a hard time imagining it because it's, like, not supposed to be real, you know?
Yeah. It's the thing, it's the, yeah, I know. The, what I'm getting at is, though, it's like, I believe in things existing, but I also have to be skeptical about them because it's not always going to be true.
Yeah.
Because anyone can fake anything. Like the Fiji mermaid.
Yep.
Yeah. That was a big, like,
sideshow attraction.
But that's just, to me, that's just a little bit of, like, vampire history. Oh, if you didn't already know that, but I mean, there was also the big case of, like, the vampire in, what, Massachusetts or something, where it was, like, they thought it was the deceased daughter of a family, and what they did was, like, they burned her heart,
yeah,
turned it into a concoction, and made, like, the son drink it, because he was, like, afflicted. Yeah, cannibalism. And at least this was before, like, embalming.
Yeah.
So there wouldn't be chemicals.
Still gross, though.
But I don't know, in this day and age, there's different accounts, like energy vampires that drain the energy from people.
Mm-hmm.
And again, there's just a bunch of different stuff. There is a bunch of different stuff. The rest of the site was an alphabetized listing of all the different myths of vampires held throughout the world. The first I clicked on was the Dinag, was a Filipino vampire supposedly responsible for planting taro on the islands long ago. The myth continued that the Dinag worked with humans for many years, but the partnership ended one day when a woman cut her finger and a Dinag sucked her wound, enjoying the taste so much that it drained her body completely of blood.
Rude.
Very. I read carefully through the descriptions, looking for anything that sounded familiar, let alone plausible. It seemed that most vampire myths centered around beautiful women as demons and children as victims. They also seemed to like to constructs created to explain away the high mortality rates for young children and to give men an excuse for infidelity. Many of the stories involved bodiless spirits and warnings against improper burials. There wasn't much that sounded like the movies I'd seen, and only a few, like the Hebrew Estri and the Polish Upir, were even preoccupied with drinking blood. Only three entries really caught my attention. The Romanian Veracolaki, a powerful undead being who could appear as a beautiful pale-skinned human. The Slovak Nelpasi, a creature so strong and fast it could massacre an entire village in the single hour after midnight. And one other, the Stregoni Benefici. I think I've actually heard the story. No, wait, maybe I hadn't heard of that one. I know there's, like, this really good one in, like, I don't, Russia kind of area. I can't remember what it's called, though. Yeah. Again, Scared to Death did an episode about it. Stregoni Benefici, an Italian vampire said to be on the side of goodness, a mortal enemy of all evil vampires. Google it.
How do I spell it?
Stregoni, S-T-R-E, G-O-N-I. Then, second word, B-N-E.
Wait, the Stregoni Benefici. Okay.
Yeah. I need to know.
It's only coming up as, like, a Twilight thing.
So it's not real. What does it translate into?
Well, that was one of the searches. You know what? We'll just do a Google Translate.
Because Benefici sounds like benefit.
Yeah.
And then I think of Stregini, and then I'm like, Streganona? I loved that book. It was a relief that one small entry, the one myth among hundreds that claimed the existence of good vampires. It's not real, though.
Jesus.
Almost choked on a fry.
Beneficial Sorcerers.
What the fuck?
Did I spell it right?
Yeah. Beneficial Sorcerers. Why would I think more of, like, this is an alchemist?
Sounds like a wizard.
It does. Overall, though, there was little that coincided with Jacob's stories or my own observations. I made a little catalog in my mind as I'd read and carefully compared it with each myth. Speed, strength, beauty, pale skin, eyes that shift color, and then Jacob's criteria. Blood drinkers, enemies of the werewolf, cold-skinned, and immortal. There were very few myths that matched even one factor, because they're all over the board.
Yeah.
And then another problem, one that I remembered from the small number of scary movies that I'd seen and was backed up by today's reading. Vampires couldn't come out in the daytime.
Wow, Bella.
The sun would burn them to a cinder. They slept in coffins all day and came out only at night. Aggravated, I snapped off the computer's main power switch, not waiting to shut things down properly. Through my irritation, I felt overwhelmed, overwhelming embarrassment. It was also stupid. I was sitting in my room researching vampires. What was wrong with me? I decided that most of the blame belonged to the doorstep of the town of Forks and the entire sodden Olympic Peninsula. God. For that matter, I had to get out of the house, but there was nowhere I wanted to go that didn't involve a 3-day drive. I pulled on my boots anyway, unclear where I was headed, and went downstairs. I shrugged into my raincoat without checking the weather and stomped out the door. It was overcast, but not raining yet. I'm gonna keep coughing, I guess.
It's my favorite when you choke on something and then keep coughing.
Yep. I ignored my truck and started east on foot, angling across Charlie's yard toward the ever-encroaching forest. It didn't take long till I was deep enough for the house and the road to be invisible, for the only sound to be the squish of the damp earth under my feet and the sudden cries of the jays.
This feels dangerous.
It does.
Like I'm walking out in the woods.
You know, this sounds like how you end up in a murder dock.
Yeah, it sure fucking does, Maya.
There was a thin ribbon of a trail that led through the forest here, or I wouldn't risk wandering on my own like this. My sense of direction was hopeless. Yeah. I could get lost in much less helpful surroundings. The trail wound deeper and deeper into the forest, mostly east as far as I could tell. It snaked through the Sitka spruces and the hemlocks and yews and the maples. I only vaguely knew the names of the trees around me. And all I knew was due to Charlie pointing them out to me from the cruiser window in earlier days. There were many I didn't know and others I couldn't be sure about because they were so covered in green parasites. Well, I'm just checking something. Okay. I followed the trail as long as my anger at myself pushed me forward. As that started to ebb, I slowed. A few drops of moisture trickled down from the canopy above me, but I couldn't be certain if it was beginning to rain or if it was simply pools left over from yesterday. Held high in the leaves above me, slowly dripping their way back to the earth, a recently fallen tree. I knew it was recent because I wasn't entirely carpeted in moss, rested against the trunk of one of her sisters, creating a sheltered little bench just a few safe feet off the trail. I stepped over the ferns and sat carefully, making sure my jacket was between the damp seat and my clothes wherever they touched, and leaned my hooded head back against the living tree. This was the wrong place to have come. I should have known, but where else was there to go? The forest was deep green and far too much like the scene in last night's dream to allow for peace of mind. Now that there was no longer the sound of my soggy footsteps, the silence was piercing. The birds were quiet, too, the drops increasing in frequency, so it must be raining above. The ferns stood higher than my head now that I was seated, and I knew someone could walk by on the path 3 feet away and not see me. Here in the trees, it was much easier to believe the absurdities that embarrassed me indoors. Nothing had changed in this forest for thousands of years. and all the myths and legends of 100 different lands seemed much more likely in this green haze than they had in my clear-cut bedroom. I forced myself to focus on the two most vital questions I had to answer, but I did so unwillingly. First, I had to decide if it was possible that what Jacob had said about the Cullens could be true. Immediately, my mind responded with a resounding negative. It was silly and morbid to entertain such ridiculous notions. But what then? I asked myself. There was no rational explanation for how I was alive at this moment. I listed again in my head the things I had observed myself. The impossible speed and the strength. The eye colors shifting from black to gold and back again. The inhuman beauty. The pale, frigid skin. The more small things that registered slowly. How they never seemed to eat. The disturbing grace with which they moved, and the way he sometimes spoke with unfamiliar cadences and phrases that better fit a style of a turn-of-the-century novel than that of a 21st-century classroom. He had skipped classes the day we had done blood typing. He hadn't said no to the beach trip till he heard where we were going. He seemed to know what everyone around him was thinking, except me. He had told me he was the villain, dangerous. Because he's the bad guy.
Duh.
Yep. Could the Cullens be vampires?
No.
No! Not at all. No.
That's silly.
That's so silly. You silly little goose.
You silly goose.
You little silly you goose.
You silly goose.
Well, they were something. Something outside the possibility of rational justification was taking place in front of me. My incredulous eyes. Whether it be Jacob's cold ones or my own superhero theory, Edward Cullen was not human. He was something more. He was from the planet Krypton.
He was Batman.
You know what? Yeah, he was. He was Batman. Because he's Batman.
I'm Batman.
I'm Batman.
I am Groot.
I'm Batman.
I'm Groot.
I'm Batman. I love it. So then, maybe, that would have to be my answer for now. Then the most important question of all, what was I going to do if it was true? If Edward was a vampire, I could hardly make myself think the words. Then what should I do? Involving someone else was definitely out. I couldn't even believe myself. Anyone I told would have me committed. I think it would take a little bit more than that.
It would.
Just a little bit more. Maybe if you showed up at his house at like 3 a.m. with a steak in hand.
That would definitely be the way.
I'm not talking about a wooden steak
either. Is this a meat steak?
Just a meat steak. Emmett would probably eat it, no cap. He would eat it.
Oh, he probably would.
He would eat it. Only two options seemed practical. The first was to take his advice, to be smart, to avoid him as much as possible. To cancel our plans, to go back to ignoring him as far as I was able. To pretend there was an impenetrably thick glass wall between us and in the one class where we were forced together. To tell him to leave me alone, and mean it this time. I was gripped by a sudden agony of despair as I considered that alternative. My mind rejected the pain, quickly skipping on to the next option. Because it'd be so painful.
Mm-hmm.
So painful.
So painful.
I could do nothing different. After all, if he was something sinister, he'd done nothing to hurt me so far. In fact, I would be a dent in Tyler's fender if he hadn't acted so quickly. So quickly, I argued with myself that it must have been sheer reflexes. But if it was a reflex to save lives, how bad could he be? I retorted. My head spun around in answerless circles. There was one thing I was sure of. If I was sure of anything, the dark Edward in my dream last night was a reflection only of my fear of the word Jacob had spoken, and not Edward himself. Even so, when I screamed out in terror at the werewolf's lunge, it wasn't fear for the wolf that brought the cry of no to my lips. It was the fear that he would be harmed, even as he called to me with his sharp-edged fangs. I feared for him. I call bullshit.
Me too.
I call bullshit because Jacob turned into the werewolf. He turned into the wolf because he's running with the wolves tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Sure is.
Because, you know, our mother has been absent ever since we founded Rome. But there's going to be a party when the wolf comes home.
Yes.
I'm just quoting songs now. Because, you know, he's not exactly a werewolf of London.
No, he's not. He's a werewolf of the United States.
He's an American werewolf.
That is not in London.
Yep.
In case anybody needed that distinction.
Yeah. I knew in that I had my answer. I didn't know if there ever was a choice, really. I was already in too deep. Now that I knew, if I knew, I could do nothing about my frightening secret, because when I thought of him, of his voice, his hypnotic eyes, the magnetic force of his personality, I wanted nothing more than to be with him right now, even if, but I couldn't think it, not here, alone, in the darkening forest, not while the rain made it as dim as twilight.
No!
Title drop! Under the canopy, and pattered like footsteps across the matted earthen floor, I shivered and rose quickly from my place of concealment, worried that somehow the path would have disappeared with the rain. But it was there, safe and clear, winding its way out of the dripping green maze. I followed it hastily, my hood pulled close around my face, becoming surprised, as I nearly ran through the trees, at how far I had come. I started to wonder if I was heading out at all, or following the path farther into the confines of the forest. Before I could get too panicky, though, I began to glimpse some open spaces through the webbed branches. And then I could hear a car passing on the street, and I was free. Charlie's lawn stretched out in front of me, the house beckoning me, promising warmth and dry socks. It was noon when I got back inside. I went upstairs and got dressed for the day, jeans and a t-shirt, since I was staying indoors. It didn't take too much effort to concentrate on my task for the day, a paper on Macbeth that was due Wednesday. I settled into outlining a rough draft, contentedly more serene than I felt since Thursday afternoon, if I was being honest. That had always been my way, though. Making decisions was the painful part for me, the part I agonized over. But once the decision was made, I simply followed through, usually with relief that the choice was made. Sometimes the relief was tainted by despair, like my decision to come to Forks. But it was still better than wrestling with the alternatives. The decision was ridiculously easy to live with. Dangerously easy. And so the day was quiet, productive. I finished my paper before 8. Charlie came home with a large catch, and I made a mental note to pick up a book of recipes for fish while I was in Seattle next week. The chills that flashed up my spine whenever I thought of that trip were no different than the ones I felt before I had taken my walk with Jacob Black. They should be different, I thought. I should be afraid. I knew I should be, but I couldn't feel the right kind of fear. I slept dreamlessly that night, exhausted from beginning my day so early and sleeping so poorly the night before. I woke for the second time since arriving in Forks to the bright yellow light of a sunny day. I literally skipped to the window, stunned to see that there was hardly a cloud in the sky, and there were just fleecy little white puffs that couldn't possibly be carrying any rain. I opened the window, surprised when it opened silently, without sticking, not having opened it in who knows how many years, and sucked in the relatively dry air. Is this a hint that Edward gets in through the window?
I think so.
Yep. It was nearly warm and hardly windy at all. My blood was electric in my veins. I'm gonna let you read now. Yeah.
Where am I at?
Oh, God. Our pages are different. I'm at 116. Charlie was finding breakfast.
Can you turn on the light that points to the ceiling? Thank you. No. There we go. Charlie was finishing breakfast when I came downstairs, and he picked up on my mood immediately. Nice day out, he commented. Yes, I agreed with a grin.
The hills are alive with the sound of it's not raining anymore.
Yes. He smiled back, his brown eyes crinkling around the edges. When Charlie smiled, it was easier to see why he and my mother had jumped too quickly into an early marriage. Odd thing to think about your dad.
Okay.
Most of the young romantic he'd been in those days had faded before I'd known him, as the curly brown hair, the same color, if not the same texture as mine, had dwindled slowly, revealing more and more of the shiny skin of his forehead. But when he smiled, I could see a little bit of the man who had run away with Renee when she was just 2 years older than I was now. I ate breakfast cheerily, watching the dust motes stirring in the sunlight that streamed in the back window. Charlie called out a goodbye, and I heard the cruiser pull away from the house. I hesitated on my way out the door, hand on my rain jacket. It would be tempting fate to leave it home. With a sigh, I folded it over my arm and stepped out into the brightest light I'd seen in months. By dint of much elbow grease, I was able to get both windows in the truck almost completely rolled down. I was one of the first ones to school. I hadn't even checked the clock in my hurry to get outside. I parked and headed toward the seldom used picnic benches on the south side of the cafeteria. The benches were still a little damp, so I sat on my jacket, glad to have a use for it. My homework was done, the product of a slow social life, but there were a few trig problems I wasn't sure I had right. I took out my book industriously, but halfway through rechecking the first problem, I was daydreaming, watching the sunlight play on the red-barked trees. I sketched inattentively along the margins of my homework. After a few minutes, I suddenly realized I'd drawn five pairs of dark eyes staring out of the page at me. I scrubbed them out with an eraser. "Bella," I heard someone call, and it sounded like Mike. I looked around to realize that the school had become populated while I'd been sitting there, absent-minded. Everyone was in t-shirts, some even in shorts, so the temperature couldn't be over 60. Mike was coming toward me in khaki shorts and a striped rugby shirt, waving.
Oh, that sounds so gross.
Right. Yikes.
I can picture it in my head.
Me too, and I don't want to.
It sounds so gross.
"Hey, Mike," I called, waving back, unable to be half-hearted on a morning like this. He came to sit by me, the tidy spikes of his hair shining golden in the light, his grin stretching across his face. He was so delighted to see me, I couldn't help but feel gratified. "I never noticed before. Your hair has a bit of red in it," he commented, catching between his fingers a strand that was fluttering in the light breeze.
Ooh, that would make my heart beat.
I know, right?
Mm-hmm.
Only in the sun. I became just a little uncomfortable when he tucked the lock of hair behind my ear.
Ooh, yeah.
That's where it's at.
It's only nice when it's someone that you actually like.
That's fair, but you know.
Yeah, I know.
"My kind of day," I agreed. "What did you do yesterday?" His tone was just a bit too proprietary. "That's just a question, Bella. Jesus Christ."
Yeah, he saw you one day during the weekend and he's like, "Oh, what'd you do, like, yesterday?"
Yeah.
Yeah.
"I mostly worked on my essay. I didn't add that I was finished with it. No need to sound smug." He hits his forehead with the heel of his hand. "Oh, yeah, that's due Thursday, right? Wednesday, I think." "Wednesday," he frowned. "That's not good. What are you writing yours on?" "Whether Shakespeare's treatment of the female characters is misogynistic." That sounds like something I would have to be forced to read.
Okay, but like, that feels ironic.
It does, right?
Yeah.
He stared at me like I just spoke in pig Latin. I can't tell if it's time for the people to be loud or not.
It's 5:51.
Yeah, it's usually about 3 to 3:30 a.m.
Oh, fun.
Which reminds me, I didn't tell you this bit, but I'll say it after we finish recording.
Sounds good. Pig Latin.
Yes. I guess I'll have to get to work on that tonight, he said deflated. I was going to ask if you wanted to go out.
But you're taking Jessica to the dance!
I know! Ugh! Oh, I was taken off guard. Why couldn't I ever have a pleasant conversation with Mike anymore without it getting awkward?
This is why you need to tell him I'm not interested.
I know.
No, thank you.
Well, we could go to dinner or something, and I could work on it later, he smiled at me hopefully. Mike, .. I hated being put on the spot. I don't think that would be the best idea. His face fell. Why? He asked, his eyes guarded. My thoughts flickered to Edward, wondering if that's where his thoughts were as well. I think, if you ever repeat what I'm saying right now, I will cheerfully beat you to death, I threatened. But I think that would hurt Jessica's feelings. He was bewildered, obviously not thinking in that direction at all. Jessica. Really, Mike, are you blind?
I think he's just stupid.
Yeah, he's a boy, so... Yeah. Oh, he exhaled, clearly dazed. I took advantage of that to make my escape. It's time for class. I can't be late again. I gathered my books and stuffed them in my bag. We walked in silence to Building 3, and his expression was distracted. I hoped whatever thoughts he was immersed in were leading him in the right direction. When I saw Jessica intrigued, she was bubbling with enthusiasm. She, Angela, and Lauren were going to Port Angeles tonight to go dress shopping for the dance, and she wanted me to come, too, even though I didn't need one. I was indecisive. Oh my god, Bella! They are literally asking you to do something, and this is how you're gonna be!
They're literally asking, like, I know you're not going, but do you want to come with us? Because it would be fun. It's a bonding experience. Look, I get if she doesn't want to go because Lauren's going to be there, because Lauren's honestly just been a bitch to her, and yeah. I could get, like, I want to hang out with Lauren. That sounds, I'd rather pull out my teeth. The pliers.
It would be nice to get out of town with some girlfriends, but Lauren would be there, and who knew what I could be doing tonight,
Okay, all you have to say is, and Lauren could be there. Yeah. Lauren would be there.
No. Yeah. We need to keep going. But what was definitely the wrong path to let my mind wander down. Of course, I was happy about the sunlight, but that wasn't completely responsible for the euphoric mood I was in, not even close. So I gave her a maybe, telling her I'd have to talk with Charlie first. She talked of nothing but the dance on the way to Spanish, continuing as if without an interruption when class finally ended, 5 minutes late. And we were on our way to lunch. I was far too lost in my own frenzy of anticipation to notice much of what she said. How rude. I was painfully eager to see not just him, but all the Cullens, to compare them with the new suspicions that plagued my mind. As I crossed the threshold of the cafeteria, I felt the first true tingle of fear slither down my spine and settle in my stomach. Would they be able to know what I was thinking? And then a different feeling jolted through me. Would Edward be waiting to sit with me again?
Okay.
Yep. We're just gonna leave it alone.
We're leaving it alone.
As was my routine, I glanced first toward the Cullen's table. A shiver of panic trembled in my stomach as I realized it was empty. With dwindling hope, my eyes scouted the rest of the cafeteria, hoping to find him alone, waiting for me. The place was nearly filled. Spanish had made us late, but there was no sign of Edward or any of his family. Desolation hit me with crippling strength. I shambled along behind Jessica, not bothering to pretend to listen anymore.
Still rude.
We were late enough that everyone was already at our table. I avoided the empty chair next to Mike in favor of one by Angela.
Who was just kind of staring into space and, like, thinking about her own things.
Yeah. I vaguely noticed that Mike held the chair out politely for Jessica and that her face lit up in response. That was nice.
Yeah.
Angela asked a few quiet questions about the Macbeth paper, which I answered so naturally as I could. As naturally as I could, while spiraling downward in misery.
Jesus.
She, too, invited me to go with them tonight, and I agreed now, grasping at anything to distract myself. I realized I'd been holding on to the last shred of hope when I entered biology, saw his empty seat, and felt a new wave of disappointment.
Okay, I wonder how Jessica feels. She asked Bella to go, Bella's like, maybe, and then Angela asks Bella to go, Bella says yes.
It's all dumb.
It is.
The rest of the day passed slowly, dismally. In gym, we had a lecture on the rules of badminton. The next torture they had lined up for me.
Badminton's actually fun.
I'm not very good at it, but
I still think it's fun.
So I got another day off tomorrow. But the best part was the coach didn't finish, so I got another day off tomorrow. Never mind that. The day after, they would arm me with a racket before unleashing me on the rest of the class. I was glad to leave campus, so I would be free to pout and mope before I went out tonight with Jessica and company. But right after I walked in the door of Charlie's house, Jessica called to cancel our plans. I tried to be happy that Mike had asked her out to dinner. I really was relieved that he finally seemed to be catching on.
Okay, that's a little bit shitty, though.
I know.
Canceling plans with your friends because someone suddenly asked you out on a date?
My enthusiasm sounded false in my own ears. She rescheduled our shopping trip for tomorrow night.
I mean, that makes sense, too.
Which left me with little in the way of distractions. I had fish marinating for dinner with salad and bread left over from the night before. So there was nothing to do there. I spent a focused half hour on homework, but then I was through that with that, too. I checked my email, reading the backlog of letters from my mother, getting snippier as they progressed to the present. I sighed and typed a quick response.
You didn't respond to your mom?
I know. How rude.
God.
Mom, sorry. I've been out. I went to the beach with some friends, and I had to write a paper. My excuses were fairly pathetic, so I gave up on that. It's sunny outside today. I know. I'm shocked, too. So I'm going to go outside and soak up as much vitamin D as I can. I love you, Bella.
And you know what we mean by vitamin D.
I decided to kill an hour with non-school-related reading. I had a small collection of books that came with me to Forks, the shabbiest volume being a compilation of the works of Jane Austen. Of course it is.
Mm-hmm.
I selected that one and headed to the backyard, grabbing a ragged old quilt from the linen cupboard at the top of the stairs on my way down. Outside in Charlie's small square yard, I folded the quilt in half and laid it out of the reach of the tree's shadows on the thick lawn that would always be slightly wet no matter how long the sun shone. I lay on my stomach, crossing my ankles in the air, flipping through the different novels in the book, trying to decide which would occupy my mind the most thoroughly. My favorites were Pride and Prejudice and Sense and Sensibility. I have read neither.
I have one of them, and I want to read it. I just have a backlog of books.
I'd read the first most recently, so I started into Sense and Sensibility, only to remember, after I began Chapter 3, that the hero of the story happened to be named Edward. Oh, how convenient. Angrily, I turned to Mansfield Park, but the hero of that piece was named Edmund. Damn, sucks to fucking suck, Bella.
Jeez. That's what you like for liking 100-year-old dick?
I'm sorry. That was really good, though.
I am funny sometimes.
Oh my goodness, that was great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Weren't there any other names available in the late 18th century? Clearly not.
I mean, Edward, Edmund, James, Henry. Those are, like, the popular names.
I snap the book shut, annoyed, and roll over onto my back. I push my sleeves up as high as they would go and closed my eyes.
They went up, like, all the way to, like... her shoulders.
She, like, just rolled them straight, you know.
Just straight across.
Yeah. I would think of nothing but the warmth on my skin, I told myself severely. The breeze was still light, but it blew tendrils of hair around my face, and that tickled a bit.
Word count.
I pulled all my hair over my head. That seems...
uncomfy.
Yeah. Letting it fan out on the quilt above me and focused again on the heat that touched my eyelids, my cheekbones, my nose, my lips, my forearms, my neck soaked through my light shirt. The next thing I was conscious of was the sound of Charlie's cruiser turning onto the bricks of the driveway. I sat up in surprise, realizing the light was gone behind the trees and I had fallen asleep. I looked around, muddled with the sudden feeling that I wasn't alone.
Edward was so watching her.
He certainly was.
Oh, yes.
Charlie, I asked, but I could hear his door slamming in front of the house. I jumped up, foolishly edgy, gathering the now damp quilt and my book. I ran inside to get some oil heating on the stove, realizing that dinner would be late. Charlie was hanging up his gun belt and stepping out of his boots when I came in. Sorry, Dad, dinner's not ready yet. I fell asleep outside. I stifled a yawn. Don't worry about it, he said. I wanted to catch the score on the game anyway. I watched TV with Charlie after dinner for something to do. There wasn't anything on I wanted to watch, but he knew I didn't like baseball, so he turned it to some mindless sitcom that neither of us enjoyed. He seemed happy, though, to be doing something together.
Wait, would baseball really be going on in March?
No, it wouldn't. Wait,
basketball and baseball wouldn't be going on at the same time.
They definitely would not.
No.
Oh, Stephanie.
Unless, is it a different country? But
no. Oh, Stephanie. He's... and it felt good, despite my depression, to make him happy. Dad, I said during a commercial, Jessica and Angela are going to look at dresses for the dance tomorrow night in Port Angeles, and they wanted me to help them choose. Do you mind if I go with them? Jessica Stanley, he asked. And Angela Weber, I sighed as I gave him the details. He was confused. But you're not going to the dance, right? No, Dad, but I'm helping them find dresses. You know, giving them constructive criticism.
No, not constructive criticism. Not constructive criticism.
No, criticism. Just criticism.
Well, it's more of like... it's more of like gently offering like... that dress does not look good on you. It is not a good-looking dress.
I wouldn't have to explain this to a woman. Well, okay, he seemed to realize that he was out of his depth with the girly stuff. It's not even that girly. Mm. It's a school night, though. We'll leave right after school so we can get back early. You'll be okay for dinner, right? Bells, I fed myself for 17 years before you got here, he reminded me. I don't know how you survived, I muttered, then added more clearly. I'll leave some things for cold cut sandwiches in the fridge, okay? Right on top.
Okay, he's a grown-ass adult.
He is.
He can feed himself. You don't have to feed him. He's not your mom, who obviously can't even open, like, the child-proof cap on those, like, pill bottles.
So cringe.
Mm-hmm.
It was sunny again in the morning. I awakened with renewed hope. That I grimly tried to suppress. I dressed for the warmer weather in a deep blue V-neck blouse, something I'd worn in the dead of winter in Phoenix. I had planned my arrival at school so that I barely had time to make it to class. With a sinking heart, I circled the full lot looking for a space, while also searching for the silver Volvo that was clearly not there. I parked in the last row and hurried to English, arriving breathless, but subdued before the final bell. It was the same as yesterday. I just couldn't keep little sprouts of hope from budding in my mind, only to have them squash painfully as I searched the lunchroom in vain and sat at my empty biology table. The Port Angeles scheme was back on again for tonight, and made all the more attractive by the fact that Lauren had other obligations.
You know, again, I don't blame her for avoiding Lauren, because Lauren honestly sounds like a bitch, but Bella's right. Also not that great.
I was anxious to get out of town so I could stop glancing over my shoulder, hoping to see him appear out of the blue the way he always did. I vowed to myself that I would be in a good mood tonight to not ruin Angela's or Jessica's enjoyment in the dress hunting. Maybe I could do a little clothes shopping as well. I refused to think that I might be shopping alone in Seattle this weekend, no longer interested in the earlier arrangement. Surely he wouldn't cancel without at least telling me. After school, Jessica followed me home in her old white Mercury so I could ditch my books and truck. I brushed through my hair quickly when I was inside, feeling a slight lift of excitement as I contemplated getting out of Forks. I left a note for Charlie on the table, explaining again where to find dinner. Bella, cringe, switched my scruffy wallet from my school bag to a purse I rarely used and ran out to join Jessica. We went to Angela's house next, and she was waiting for us. My excitement increased exponentially as we drove... as we actually drove out of the town limits.
Again, Bella, he's a grown-ass adult. He can find dinner on his own. Again, he has rock. He can go hunt.
Yes.
Rock equals dinner. He can just eat the rock.
He could just eat the rock.
He can just eat the whole rock.
Go eat grass.
Go eat grass. Look, it's grass. Touch it. Eat it. Sniff it. Do what you want with it.
Big stretch.
I see where Barry gets it from.
Yep.
Why do I just want to... boop. I just moved her stomach.
I'm stretching and my shirt came up a little bit.
It's like Stretch Armstrong.
I'm so long.
You have long limbs.
I do.
It's like silly long.
I mean, I usually keep my arms tucked in. Like, really tight.
Like Velociraptor.
I do.
Velociraptor arms.
Because then everybody's really surprised. They're like, wow, you do have really long arms. And I'm like, I am aware.
It's the better so you can, like, gently rub your fingers against their face while they sleep and you're just under their bed.
Yeah, exactly.
Because deep down, we're just a bunch of horror cryptids here.
Yes.
Sai is that creature under the bed and I'm the eldritch horror.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what it is.
But instead of that creature under the bed, I want to be that bitch under the bed.
You know, that works too.
I am 100% that bitch.
Under the bed.
Who is also a cryptid.
Yep. You don't really do anything that bad. You just rub your fingers over their face all gentle. And I'm just like,
what are you doing in my house?
I want waffle fries.
I probably do.
Yeah, no, that doesn't sound bad.
Right now, I don't want waffle fries. I want McDonald's fries.
Then they have to get out of bed, yes. And they have to take you to McDonald's, or else you drag them down to hell.
Yes.
There we go. There's the myth.